Whether it's slots or live dealers, SpinQuest.com has the fun and action you're looking for with SpinQuest exclusives, blackjack, roulette, baccarat, and even live dice with craps and bubble craps. The games never stop, so you don't have to. And right now, new users get $30 coin packs for just 10 bucks. Play now at SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
This is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
To Red Square, Victory Day, May 9th, 1945, May 9th, 2023. The headline in the Telegraph tells a story that needs explanation. Putin watches single tank drive down Red Square in scaled-back Victory Day parade. Subhead, amount of weaponry on display for military celebration was noticeably down on previous years. Air section canceled. I welcome Colonel Jeff McCausland, United States Army retired, an artilleryman, CBS News, visiting professor Dickinson College, CEO of Diamond Six Leadership and Strategy. The single tank, first, Jeff, requires an explanation. So does the single tank flying the hammer and sickle red flag of a defeated and disgraced empire. First, the tank. What was it, Jeff?
The tank, John, was a T-34, which would be a World War II era tank. So therefore, one could argue this particular parade, which commemorates, as you rightly point out, the victory back in 1945, some 78 years ago, having a piece of vintage equipment from that conflict in the parade, perhaps appropriate. Not having any modern hardware in there, indicative of the tremendous losses of hardware that the Russians have suffered in the war in Ukraine for the last 14, 15 months. The flying of the hammer and sickle, I think, is very interesting. Obviously, one could argue that was the state that historically defeated Nazi Germany, the Soviet Union, Russia, and being a large part of that. But clearly, Mr. Putin, in his remarks this year, as well as last, has been trying to take over the narrative that is that the war in Ukraine is just like the war against the Nazis. And he uses those words. This is a war against the Nazis. This is a war against fascism. This is just like the war your grandparents fought. We are fighting for Russia's very existence. We are in fact, the victims in this particular conflict. So he's trying to adopt that narrative to build up support for the war, convince young men to join because he certainly needs more manpower, and convince Russians they should put up with more casualties and probably more deprivation economically in the days and weeks ahead.
The EU and NATO are going to look at these statements and ask this question. Is he talking about a dead empire? Or is he talking about his aspirations of reuniting that dead empire? That would mean the Baltics. That would mean Poland. That would mean Slovakia, Hungary, all the way to Berlin. I can't tell. Can you, Jeff?
I think clearly that was his aspiration because way back, don't forget, in 2005, Mr. Putin gave his annual speech to the Russian people. And in that speech, he said that the collapse of the Soviet Union was the greatest tragedy of the 20th century. Now, this coming from a leader whose country lost over 30 million people killed in World War II, you might think that would have ranked up there as the most significant. But for him, it was the end of the Soviet Union. But he's not a communist. He's not interested in recreating the Soviet Union per se. What he's really interested in is creating the Russian Empire once again. Putin, I think, thinks of himself more as Peter the Great than thinks of himself as the 21st century version of Joseph Stalin. And as a consequence, he's talked about Ruski Mir since those days, some 18 years ago, and that is the Russian world. And he said repeatedly, where there are Russians, there is Russia. Large Russian population in Ukraine, as well as the Baltic republics, as you point out, in other areas in the periphery of Russia, that he has had at least the aspiration to expand. Certainly that seems to be now great folly, as this war in Ukraine has not proceeded in the fashion that he had hoped.
A whole lot of people can speak Russian who were never Russian nationals. That's Central Asia. That's East Berlin. We'll put down the symbolism as to undetermined. All right, we'll just leave it alone and we'll turn to the battlefield. Bakhmut, this is within these last hours. London is reporting, and this would be the Ministry of Defense, Ukraine seizes part of Bakhmut in biggest counteroffensive for months. Russian troops were seen fleeing across open fields, pursued by a Soviet-era tank belonging to Ukraine's 3rd Assault Brigade. On the Telegraph site is a video from a drone of Russian soldiers, I'm counting six of them, running as fast as they can with their weapons across a field, and crashing through behind them is an Ukrainian tank, we're told. The video is convincing that something unusual is happening in Bakhmut, which, Jeff, we have been describing as a baby Verdun, as a slugfest, of an artillery contest, not witnessing darting armor chasing infantry. Chasing infantry that heretofore we were understood were armed with anti-tank weapons so that this would be reckless for the tank. They're running, Jeff. What significance is this?
Well, it's enormously significant, I think, in a couple of ways, John. One is, of course, the Battle of Bakhmut has really been going on since November. While both sides talked about it to some degree, Russians more than Ukrainians, having great military significance, really it doesn't terrain-wise. It has taken on, I think, a lot more political significance, and the Russians making it a focal point of showing some demonstration of success. We can defeat the Ukrainians. It does appear the Ukrainians decided to defend Bakhmut to reverse that narrative, more because of the political value, the psychological value, particularly to Ukrainian morale, that we could stand up and prevent the Russians from seizing this particular city. Oh, by the way, we could also, kind of like Verdun, as you recall, John, bleed the Russians white, bleed the Russians of manpower, that over time they set the stage for our counteroffensive movement to be more successful. In doing so, of course, they suffered their own casualties. But again, this report that the Russian 72nd Brigade has fled the area and the Ukrainians have gained a good bit of territory. We've even gotten Yevgeny Prigozhin, head of the Wagner Group, saying that he has written, I'm quoting him now, he is concerned of a serious risk of the encirclement of Wagner Group troops in the Bakhmut and the Donbass more generally. And that's one thing that the Russians and their doctrine really feel, is encirclement by an advancing offensive force. Finally, of course, there's no doubt about it, John, what we see of those Russian troops, what does this tell us, perhaps, about the broader state of morale across the entire Russian front of some 600 miles as the Ukrainians begin for this offensive? This appears to be one of their more experienced units, and if they're collapsing and running away, might that be saying, in morale terms at least, we're setting the stage for the Ukrainians to gain at least tactical and operational success, but they need to achieve strategic success, I would argue, if they're going to clearly reverse the situation on the Russians.
Reading the history of war in Europe, chiefly the Second War, what I learned from the history, and you've lived it, Jeff, is that you reinforce success. You probe. If you find a weakness, you pour into it until you're stopped. This looks like a surprise success, and the Ukrainians can reinforce it. Is this a counteroffensive? Does it qualify?
It certainly could be one. Right now, I'd say, again, it's a tactical success, which could grow into being an operational and possibly a strategic success. It's all a function of then, do they now devote their resources to that particular area, thinking they may have a potential breakthrough? That includes not only manpower, but obviously materiel, logistics, fuel being a classic thing that needs to be required. And we've seen in history, did that in Western Europe, after the breakout from the beachheads in Normandy in 1944. But it requires not only manpower, but it requires the pushing forward rapidly of materiel, not allowing your opponent to recover, but constantly them trying to react to what you're doing. That would be the goal that the Ukrainians would try to seek.
Yes, when you see panic, you keep attacking. But you have an explanation for another possibility. It's because the Ukrainian troops were trained in Russian war fighting. What does that mean, Jeff?
What that means is they really want to achieve what they call surprise. There's actually a Russian word that's closer to perhaps suddenness. And they also seek to deception, or so-called in Russian maskarovka. Do not let your opponent really know where you're coming. And, you know, we saw that, John, with the Ukrainians in the fall. They seemed to make an operational feint, I would argue, in the south around Kherson, and then conducted an offensive more in the northeast around Kharkiv with great success. They surprised the Russian. They achieved some degree of at least operational deception. And they might well be trying to do it here. Could perhaps some advance right now in the Bakhmut area just be a deception as the Russians then move more manpower into that area to close off that penetration, allowing the Ukrainians opportunities elsewhere.
Morale, Jeff, let's go over that one more time. Morale is an army. Those Russians are running. That is not morale, Jeff. That's breaking. That's not communicating to their commanders. That's not looking for reinforcement. That's in save what you can. What does that say about the morale at the front?
Well, we know, as Napoleon Bonaparte said, John, two centuries ago, the moral is to the physical as three is to one. And that clearly has been the case throughout warfare. What we may be seeing shaping up in this counteroffensive by the Ukrainians, quite candidly, is a conflict between quality versus quantity. A larger number, larger size in terms of manpower, potentially Russian force that is poorly equipped, poorly trained, poorly supported, and using, in many cases, antiquated weapons. We've seen T-54 and T-55 tanks on rail lines moving towards Ukraine. These vehicles are 80 years old, but still robust and still perhaps useful. No match for modern equipment, however. And that force will be pitted now against a Ukrainian force with the influx of an awful lot of modern Western material, HIMARS, 155s, Abrams, Leo 2s, Bradleys, et cetera, and the associated training to integrate that force into combined operations. So a smaller but more modern Ukrainian force may be what we're evolving into in this particular conflict. That's why speed and surprise for a smaller force is so important. But one has always got to worry, John, about that saying of Joseph Stalin, quantity does have a quality all its own.
Prigozhin says there's desertion underway. Do you believe it, Jeff? Is that a deception on his part? Because it's
totally. No, I do believe that totally. We've seen a number of reports by the Ukrainians interrogating prisoners who, in fact, deserted and surrendered to the Ukrainians at the first opportunity they had to avoid further conflict. I've seen reports here recently coming out of Moscow of soldiers being prosecuted. Not large numbers, but soldiers being prosecuted for desertion. And I think the publicity of that on the Russian side is really more a deterrent to other soldiers in the ranks. And finally, we know that we've got soldiers who have gotten very minimal training of a couple of weeks and then sent to the front. Constant reports of them being poorly supplied. One of the main complaints by Prigozhin about his forces was lack of ammunition. And he even stood in one video, John, in a video of himself standing amidst piles of Wagner dead corpses, talking about them being poorly supported. Soldiers that are poorly supported, poorly trained, poorly led, and left out in a harsh environment, as we've seen in the winter and spring in Ukraine, their morale is going to suffer.
Colonel Jeff McCausland, United States Army retired artilleryman, CBS News. We turn to Zaporizhia province, Zaporizhia nuclear power plant. I'm John Batchelor.
Experience the freedom of finding the one at Haverty's. Right now, everything is on sale, from sofas, sectionals, bedroom furniture, and more. Come find your style and celebrate this summer at Haverty's, online or in Columbus at Polaris.
What's going on, everyone? It's Bluff here, and we're driving through the states in the Bluffmobile, and the best thing that we can do is play our favorite casino-style games on SpinQuest. They have over 1,000 games, including live dealer, blackjack, and craps, with tons of slots and unlimited options. You can get a $30 coin pack for just $10 for new users. Sign up today. Go to SpinQuest.com right now.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Lots of places can expose you to identity theft. That's why LifeLock monitors hundreds of millions of data points a second for threats to your identity, which is way more than anyone can do on their own. If we find anything suspicious, like new loans or changes to your financial accounts, we alert you right away, all through text, phone, email, or the LifeLock app. Save up to 30% your first year. Visit LifeLock.com/iHeart. Terms apply.